Jason, and this is the Pocket Protectors podcast. I am joined once again by my friend, the good doctor. Eric, how are you?
I'm pretty well. How about you?
I am doing quite well. Just finished wrapping up with the boys from Climbing the Pocket. Good to be on with you and Luke. Some interesting topics for us to go over. It's a good night. And speaking of...
Well, that's great. I mean, that's a good podcast. I'm talking like this. They talk about real football, right? We talk about numbers football.
Yeah, numbers football. You know, like never put your hand in the dirt football or something. Except for Eric, who also did that. So kind of throws it off a little bit here. But Luke, what's going on, man? How are you doing? Hey, what you been up to?
Doing well. I'm dealing with a California heat wave. It's like 100 in October, and I'm sick of it.
We're not going to allow you to complain about that, based on where we live. So you know. Take the heat, enjoy it. Sorry about all that global warming, but where we are is cold, and I think it's supposed to snow at some point this week where Eric is. So, you know, we're not here for all that.
One of my favorite things to do to try California weather.
I just biked home 80-degree weather, so yeah, I'm not gonna listen to any complaints, I guess.
Yeah. You know, so with that said, before we jump too far into things here, you know, there was a game. It was kind of an ugly one. Eric, what are your thoughts on kind of how things went out there? You know, Vikings, Ravens, and I'll leave it at that. What were your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, actually, so the Vikings finally made it into the top 10 of the PFF ELO ratings. So I got to write a little bit about them this week, and I think that defense is just the truth, right? And I know Baltimore didn't have, the horses that they're normally accustomed to, even to their degree, like Jeremy Maclin gone, Rashad Perriman, Mike Wallace got injured by Andrew Sandejo, things like that. But, up front, Everson Griffin, Danielle Hunter, Brian Robinson's contributing. I think he's got somewhere around 15 pressures already. Bar is very much the linebacker all season. I think I can't remember if I tweeted this out live or if I sent it to somebody privately, but Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr surrendered 14 catches on 16 targets on Sunday, only something like 4 or 5 yards a pass, right? So, because of deficiencies in the Baltimore offense, but also because that scheme is very much taking away down the field stuff, they're funneling everything to the linebackers. And unlike a season ago, the Vikings linebackers are more than up to the task. So that was fantastic to see. So yeah, it was an ugly game, but in terms of the NFL this last week, it wasn't actually as ugly as a lot of the other games. In terms of the way that the Vikings want to win games, especially when they currently have their backup quarterback in, it was a very good recipe for success for them. So I was very sort of happy with the outcome.
That's awesome. And Luke, you know, I am going to kick it to you for your thoughts on the game. You know, this ugly game that people were thinking, you know, we didn't really play as well as we maybe should have, but I'm going to let you kind of give your thoughts on the game and then let that be our segue into our first topic, which was win probability.
Yeah, everybody's calling it an ugly win, and if it's okay to win ugly, and, you know, for one, yes, it's absolutely okay to win ugly. Look at that Bears game, and now we can say it's a 3-game winning streak instead of a 2-game winning streak. I don't care if there's a bunch of other crap that went down. But I don't think it was that ugly of a win. You know, there were some penalties and some, like, sloppy mistakes that we should, like, work on and iron out, and it's nice to be able to – I think Mike Zimmer actually said, like, it's nice to be able to fix that stuff after a win. But I guess I wanted to talk about winning ugly and the game being ugly, quote unquote, because of win probability and its ability to, like, kind of define exactly how ugly a game was and, like, the kind of flow of the game. And I think win probability added, just to for people who kind of don't, like, follow what win probability actually means, it's basically taking down and distance and field position and score. You know, if it's third and seven from your own 45 and you're down by 10, you have a certain probability to win that game, you know, and it's 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter or whatever. Versus if you're, you know, if it's second and one and you're in the red zone and it's about to be halftime and you're up 13 or something like that, and you have a higher probability to win that game. So you can take like each permutation of all of those situations and kind of assign a probability to it. And as you like jump from one to the other, you can kind of like from play to play to play, you can chart out exactly what like the win probability is becoming. And you can use expected points, which we've talked about a lot, to like calculate that. And if you look at the win probability graph for this Ravens game, it looks like a blowout. It just looks like the Ravens never really had a chance. And that's because they never really managed to get themselves into situations where like a comeback was possible. You know, they had a lot of trouble moving the ball. I think the stat that's been going around is what, like 3.3 yards per play or something absurd like that. They had a tough time moving the ball. They gave up a bunch of sacks and a bunch of pressures. And because of what Eric was talking about with the defense, the Ravens really never had a chance to erase a deficit that I guess was smaller than we would have liked it to be. And I think win probability does a really good job of capturing that. And the other game that I would love to talk about with win probability is the Super Bowl. This last Super Bowl, there was a lot of discussion about win probability because like NumberFire and a bunch of other websites that do win probability tweeted out in the middle of that game that like Atlanta had a 99.3% chance of winning or something like that. And then everybody started making fun of them, being like, well, so much for your 99.3%, as if that didn't perfectly describe what was going on in that game. And the fact that Atlanta had like a 99% chance to win the game and lost describes very well like how astounding that comeback was. And we have all these, you know, stories and all of this stuff about how amazing the comeback was. But the second you try to like assign an actual like number to it and quantify it, then people start making fun of it as if those numbers were wrong, which they were not.
Oh, and you know, that is a perfect example, but it's one that cuts close to the core. Obviously, I grew up in Atlanta and I was there over the Labor Day weekend. The fans before the season, definitely still not over that. And then just the sadness that seems to have followed them into the season. You know, my best friend, the way he talks about just everything related to football in the wake of that just crushing loss. It's still sad for Atlanta fans. And then to go and just get mollywopped the way they did playing the Patriots this past week. Just, Anywho, Eric.
They won't be able to look at the all 22.
They definitely can't from what I've seen today. Eric, I know that, you know, win probability is something that you have some takes on, some thoughts, some issues. So I will flip it over to you and let you follow up on what Luke has laid out there for us.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think what Luke said I think what he said was great in terms of you look at what do you mean? It's basically if you're going to try to, you know, people who haven't heard of it before, it's basically how many games in the history of the league have been 28-3 with this much time left in the third quarter and one, right? And over the course of a lot of games, we always remember the game where are up 31-3 or 35-3 or whatever it was to Buffalo and it came back to one. We forget the times that the team that was boat racing, the other team actually held on to win, right? And then, of course, there are other situations where, like, in a game in the NFL that was, you know, 19-3 with, you know, 4:25 left in the third quarter. And so there's some statistical sort of smoothing that has to happen. And inevitably, when that happens, like when you try to extrapolate from data, you're going to have some errors. And then also, like when you're using past data, predict, you know, future things, when something somewhat unprecedented happens, then people are going to say, well, oh, the model was wrong. But, you know, just like with presidential elections, just like with kind of anything that's sort of surprising, you know, the mathematics, I think, gives us a good guide. It doesn't mean it's always going to be correct, right? So I think mathematics, you know, the idea from like the last presidential election, the Super Bowl, we often think that like mathematics took this like huge L, but I think it did a pretty good job of characterizing sort of, for example, the Super Bowl. I think also, as Luke said, with the Vikings game on Sunday, never put themselves in position to challenge, to score touchdowns. And since the Vikings at times were up by more than a touchdown, their win probability was pretty low.
And I
Yeah,
know
I
that
think
you.
you hit on a really interesting point just with like math in general. And I guess applying margins of error is the way I would put it. Like it's really important no matter what stat we're using to like apply a small margin of error. Like I'm just quick pulling up like the current adjusted net yards per attempt rankings for the 2017 season for quarterbacks. And it's, you know, a fairly solid stat that we like to use. And right now it has Case Keenum 13th and Marcus Mariota 14th. That's not necessarily to say that one quarterback is better than the other. And they're pretty gosh darn close. So it's really important to like apply a margin of error and say, well, he might be 13th, he might be 10th, he might be 17th, but he's kind of somewhere in there. And to understand that like numbers and stats, you know, and the better numbers you use, the smaller the margin of error can get. But it's important to apply a small margin of error to things, especially like win probability, to say, yeah, 99.3 seems really, really high, but it's not 100. And that means, you know, that we can like that's one thing with like the election too, is a lot of the polls, a lot of 538's data, like everything was within their margin of error. So like math didn't take this huge L. Everything was just within their margin of error, and the unlikely thing happened.
I was just gonna say, I know that there was one of the things that and if you had another point, I'll let you make that before we kind of bring in, because I know that you had some points about kind of how win probability models tend to be built and how they absorb kind of the Vegas data and how that can kind of skew the accuracy or the outcome or what they're really telling us. So if you had another point, just get to that and then you can just tie it back into you know to the Vegas portion of the win probability models.
I mean, I think it's just important to know that like unlikely things happen. And if you live a life long enough, you watch enough football games, unlikely things. So like I remember distinctly walking into the election and having been a fan of 538, having, you know, sort of done some studies with them with my class, like they were like, well, how did Trump win or something like that? And it was like, well, the Colts beat the Packers that week, and I would have given the Colts probably a 33% chance of winning that game. And so even though football games happen more often, so we're likely to freak out over an outlier like that, you know, they do happen, right? So, you know, we've had what, 50 something Super Bowls. None of them went into overtime until this last one, right? So, you know, eventually, if you let enough Super Bowls happen, enough unlikely things occur. A team coming back from that big of a deficit is just one of them. I think the largest deficit prior to that, where a team came back, was something like what, 10 points? So it's just one of those things where unlikely things happen. And yeah, so to get on the win probability thing, my only objection to win probability is an absolute metric, is that, you know, it is seeded with things like the Vegas spread. And so the Vikings last week were, I'm trying to think, like 4.5 point favorites by the time everything closed up, and 5 point favorites. And so when the game started, their win probability was already 62.8%. So for the Vikings, you know, if you're going to assign win probability added shares to players, there's only 37.2% win probability to give to the whole team. Whereas if the Ravens would have won the game, there was 62.8 win probability points to give to them. And so like that doesn't seem so egregious, right? If an underdog wins, you might want to give more credit to the underdog than if the favorite wins. But of course, like if you get to things like the college football, you know, if Wisconsin's playing Illinois or something like that, and they're 25.5 point favorites, 82% chance to win right when the game starts. And so there's only like 8 win probability points to give to the whole Wisconsin team. And so that's difficult, right, to do. And so I think what you want to do is you kind of want to use it in conjunction with expected points. When the game's kind of even, middle of the first and third quarters of games, you know, look at expected points and try to maximize that. And then when it comes to the end of games, you might want to do things that or not minimize expected points, but, you know, might be negative expected points added, but positive win probability added.
Yeah, I think it is because of that reason, it would probably be a flawed process to, like, go through a season of a player and look at all the win probability they added all season. But, you know, on the other hand, like, if Wisconsin is playing Illinois and a player does really well against Illinois, I guess that is kind of a way of adjusting for, like, yeah, but it was against Illinois, which is going to, you know, inevitably be a line that you hear when you're discussing that player's performance. So I don't think it works in an aggregate sense, like over the course of a season for a player for exactly that reason. But you know, I do understand like why they use Vegas spreads, you know?
Yeah. So Eric, if you were going to, I guess, build a bot or something to inform coaches' decisions and, you know, use that combination, because you mentioned that you should use kind of expected points in the beginning and then, you know, as you move along, kind of do things that are going to maximize your opportunity to win. Like, what might something like that look like where, you know, we normal folk would be able to take kind of that information and have it be something that, you know, would help inform actions in real time?
Yeah, I mean, just to hit back on Luke's point a little bit, though, you know, I think the issue with using the Vegas spread is that go backwards, right? So if we find out later in the year that Illinois is a juggernaut, you can't sort of go back and adjust and say, oh, well, now Wisconsin, I'm going to give them, you know, 16 win probability points and all that kind of. So, I mean, that's the difficulty, right? All these problems are hard.
The Saints defense effect.
Yes. Yeah. and so, like, I would say – most of the things you want to do are to maximize expected points, because, you know, the role, like, you're never going to win a football game by trying not to lose most of the game, right? And then in very rare circumstances, so like maybe the 4-minute time, you know, at the end of each half, those kinds of things, try to maximize win probability. So where does that come up, right? Obviously, it comes up, right? You know, that's really going to influence kind of the whether or not, you know, you have one timeout with 2:10 left, or you let go down and you have 2 timeouts with 2 minutes left. Like, those are going to change the win probabilities. They're not going to change the expected points so much, because expected points are more a function of field position than anything else. So that's an issue, like whether or not to take the kickoff out of the back of the end zone. Say that if you know you're talking about a game where you have, you know, 30 seconds left on the clock, turn team, and they kick it to -8, I would maybe run that out, because there's a low probability chance that you break that kickoff return, and if you only make it out to the 16-yard line, you weren't likely to win anyway. That might be the last sort of open field play you get all game. You know what I'm saying? Whereas from an expected points perspective, you should kneel the ball down every single time. So, say, yeah, if there would be some sort of like marker, I would say, where, you know, you switch from thinking about expected points to win probability added. And that would be sort of the way that I would do it, or kind of just use them in conjunction. So one of the things I had been studying this week was, what does it mean for something to be an NFL throw? Okay. And so I was looking at, you know, what is the average expected value of the throw? What is the median expected value of the throw? What's the standard deviation expected value of the throw? And my question was always, okay, which one of these do I actually care about? And the answer is yes, I care about all three of them at the same time. Stuff that gives me a high average expected throw, high median, and high and low variance, right? Now, that's never achieved at once. All these things are going to be on a sliding scale. I think the same thing's true about win probability, expected points, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the like you know, I just you got me thinking about like the mark of where and I like where you flip to, you know, going for win probability over expected points, and I think it's when game situation like supersedes conventional wisdom. You know, like conventional wisdom is kneel the kickoff, but if game situation dictates that no, you just need to go for it, then you go for it. Or I guess the garbage time drive at the end of this Ravens game that has gotten a fair bit of discussion, because they were able to kind of like march down the field and it was kind of the only production the Ravens got all day. If you look at the win probability graph for this game, the needle didn't move at all because, you know, the clock kept running and they just never really got a chance. Like, it just took too long for them to do it, which was exactly the game plan. And conventional wisdom, you know, doesn't call for those kind of off coverages and that really soft, you know, let them catch it in front of you and tackle them in bounds kind of defense. But game situation did, and that's like bad expected points strategy, but a good win probability strategy. And so I think that's where I guess I would define the mark, although that's just like what I came up with off the top of my head.
Well, you know why people are upset about the that last score, right?
Trey Wayne's?
Also, no. It threw off my score prediction.
Oh, the over-under.
And it hit the over.
It hit the over, right? That game had under written all over it the whole game. It's like it was like the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is 0-0 after a quarter and pretty much an under game all the whole game. And then that's a bad beat if you're a bettor. And I know, like, our friend Arif was on Twitter. I don't know if – are you allowed to, like, project whether or not you bet on games and you cover – I don't know. But anyway, so he was there, like, talking about the under and all this kind of stuff. And then, of course, it hits, and that's a bad beat, you know. Like, I think that's more what people are mad about. You know, they're too, shy to admit that that's why they're mad about it. So then they project their angst on Trey Wayne's.
I feel like Al Michaels talks about the spread in pretty much every game, so –
Do you think he's got money? I see Chris, so my boss, Chris Collinsworth, the game that he does. So if you look at NFLPickWatch.com, he doesn't even pick the games because he feels that it might influence things.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, I think that's I think that's the ethical thing to do, right? In terms of if you have that if your opinion is weighted that much, it makes some sense. You know, like guys like Warren, I don't know if you've ever seen Warren Sharp's way. It's like part like porn star mustache, part 9/11 conspiracy theory show. But like Warren Sharp's this guy that, like, you know, he gives out betting advice and then the lines move like half a point. Those things are real. And so I'm always like a little weirded out by like somebody like Arif talking about like his bets, like while the game's going on.
Well, I guess maybe there's different rules for, you know, those folks and those of us who have come up through the blogosphere versus those who actually have large platforms. And I'm not sure how much the line is moving based on what Arif is saying, but I guess maybe we have to do some research on that as the weeks move along here. But speaking of the Vegas lines, I guess you said there were some interesting ones this week that you wanted to talk about. So, yeah, what you got for us, Eric?
Yeah, so I'm going to tell you guys a few that I like. I like Pittsburgh is on the road. They're only 3-point favorites against Detroit. That to me is the arbitrage opportunity of the week. That one I also like. So Baltimore is only 3-point favorites at home Thursday night against Miami. Butler is hurt. But if you've ever, you know, liked the phrase addition by subtraction, I think that one's a great one. Atlanta is a field goal and a half against the Jets on the road. Atlanta looks really good in the metrics right now, not so much on the win-loss column. Those are the places where you kind of want to have to get a little bit of value here, like San Francisco, getting 13 points. Philadelphia, who knows how they're going to respond to losing their left tackle.
I like those are some good picks. I'm gonna have to hit my man Dan up here, as he's been putting in a lot of work, listening and reading a lot of the stuff you guys are putting out there to inform his newly formed gambling habits. I'll need to make sure that that he's staying on top of all of this stuff. Yeah, you got to feed it. You got to feed it, you know, and, you know, if it looks like you're going the wrong way, you got to jump into the in-game action and make some adjustment bets to try to hedge there, you know. So I guess, Luke, did you have anything else that you wanted to cover before we wrap this thing up for the night?
I have one thought on Vegas lines. If you're looking at them for, like, your office pick'em pool or whatever, and you're trying to look at the Vegas lines to see, like, who's going to win, it is also wise to look at how the bettors are reacting to those Vegas lines, because sometimes that can help you adjust against stuff like addition by subtraction, because Jay Cutler's out. You know, that might make the line favor Baltimore more than it should. But if everybody's hitting Miami on it, then you might, you know, understand that that spread might be a little bit off. And then I guess the only other thing is I wrote about Andrew Sendejo, and since he's suspended, I wrote about how his season is going, and if he's going well, that's a bet purple PTSD, and you should check it out.
We'll definitely have to do that. And you know, he's a Gruden grinder. You know, he should probably be a pro bowler, that Andrew Sendejo, or something.
Go there.
Well, you know, I mean, Gruden really
not a glowing piece, I'll tell you that.
He really, really loved him some Andrew Sendejo, which was odd. But that's, I guess maybe that's for another pod. I guess, Eric, what do you have upcoming? What do you have out there that we should be checking out?
We have the PFF ELO rankings tomorrow, coming in at 10, which is great. Sam Monson is going to post the PFF, the offensive ratings prize at the top. But nonetheless, I think that's got to win into my pick for Atlanta this week, at least yet. But I'm pretty sure that'll look favorably on Atlanta. Friday, we have our spread picks. Last week we rebounded nicely, went 4-1, so we're 22-12-1. And yeah, I mean, looking forward to another week. I'm really looking forward to waking up on Sunday morning out with my Vikings friends on the Twitter machine and watching them, you know, grind one out against Cleveland.
Yeah, Luke, with your 100-degree temperatures and really, 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 really early morning wake-ups for Sunday morning Vikings games.
Yeah, I have a Vikings bar here in L.A. that I go to watch all the games, and they'll be open.
Wow, there's a Vikings bar in L.A.?
Yes.
Wow.
Pineapple Hill in Sherman Oaks. If you're a listener in L.A., come check it out.
It moved with the Lakers back in the day.
Oh, yeah, that does make some sense.
Yeah, people have been going. There's been like a Vikings group there that they're at this bar now, but they were at a bar in Culver City for a long time, and they've been doing it since like the 80s. It's like these six people that have been watching Vikings games together at a bar. It's really cool.
Yeah, that is awesome.
The Rams and the Vikings used to play in the playoffs like every year, I think, right?
Back in the 70s, yeah.
That was like a legitimate rivalry in like the 70s and 80s. So
it should be a good game this
year. Yeah, that's cool that, yes. That is probably their toughest test, at least defensively, I think, the rest of the year.
I guess.
And as conspiracy theory would have it, that's also when Teddy Bridgewater will make his return to the team.
There it is.
Apparently.
We can all hope.
We can certainly all hope. Yeah, I'm gonna go try to find myself some injury data because I'd like to see what I should expect from Teddy upon his return. Based on, you know, what has happened to other quarterbacks in their baseline performance when they come back from injuries like this. So injury data is it's surprisingly hard to come by on the interwebs.
It's horrible. It's even tough with the PFF data, and we chart some injury stuff, but you're absolutely right. One of the great ones that I remember, of course, is Joe Montana coming off the bench in week 17 for the Niners after taking two seasons off in 1992. That was a great one. Little known trivia fact, Vikings running back Amp Lee was the last guy to catch a touchdown pass from Joe Montana in San Francisco.
Oh my God. Wow.
Amp Lee's 71 catches in 1995 were the, I think, second or third most all time for a Vikings running back behind Chuck Foreman. So Amp Lee was like the truth, I think. We'd forget him, but all the stuff Chris Thompson's doing for the Washington Spreadskins is where Amp Lee did that a long time ago.
I have to get Kevin Cole to run some expected points analysis on Amp Lee to see where he stacks up.
That's right.
Well, all right. Well, gentlemen, this was a lot of fun. As good with all of these, I feel like I learned a ton of stuff about win probability. And then, you know, really the most important thing is Eric letting me know what I should bet on and you know, kind of indirectly who I should play in daily fantasy. So, as always, thank you for listening to the Pocket Protectors podcast. And we will talk to all of you again soon.